Welcome, everyone, to Freedom Law School's weekly conference call on this Thursday, July 14th, 2016. This is Payman Mutahideh, the founder and president of Freedom Law School, and your host for this weekly program. Every Thursday night, folks, I conduct these weekly conference calls in which I will answer your freedom questions. If you have any questions about freedom, law, your rights, and how to live free of oppressive taxation and control, you will get the answers that you have been looking for. Whether it is the IRS, or a state income tax agency that's harassing you, a police officer who may have abused you, or a bureaucrat or government agent of any kind that may have contacted you wanting to take away your rights, your liberty, your freedom of action, or trying to force you to do something you do not want to do, folks, that's where all Freedom Law School comes in. Because Freedom Law School will teach you about the law, the U.S. Constitution, and your rights. So you can stand up for yourself and your rights as a free, sovereign American. You have a right to live free. You were born free. These tyrants, politicians, bureaucrats and judges want to take away your rights and freedom. You have to stand up for your rights, for your freedom, for your property, for yourself and your family. I came from Iran, folks, to America in 1977 at the age of 14. From the land of tyranny, where the Shah, the king of Iran, was the tyrant, I was told I came to the land of the free and the home of the brave, where you have the right to free speech, right to jury trial. You know, you have so many rights that when I grew up in Iran, folks, I did not get to enjoy. And I come to America and I learn about America's rich heritage of freedom, the Declaration of Independence, and the U.S. Constitution in 1992, and how the income tax is a giant fraud which goes against the explicit language and intent of the U.S. Constitution and the Declaration of Independence and the laws of the United States as it is written. I learned that in college, that in America, all of our money is created out of thin air by legalized counterfeiting by the private banks. That's right. Private banks like Chase, Bank of America, the Citi, Wells Fargo, these crooks and criminals get to counterfeit money practically legally because the government allows them to do it. And they lend out that money to you and me and other average Americans to buy a car or a home, to businesses to expand their work, and even the governments in America borrow money from the banks. They even, folks, are allowed to make money out of thin air and invest it. Yes, they can actually do that, and they do that. It's as incredible as it sounds, folks. It's like counterfeiting, not in your garage, but out in the open, billions and billions at a time. And income tax is a part of that whole system of slavery that they want to create. So I started Freedom Law School 20 years ago, folks, in 1996, to help educate Americans about the law, about freedom law, the laws relating to freedom. Because the law is supposed to protect your freedom, defend your freedom, folks. That is what law is. to protect your freedom of action, only protect you from the bad guy, from the criminals, crooks, and thieves, who now, unfortunately, through the corruption of the political process, in large part, have taken over our government, political system, and the laws. That's why, folks, America has become so corrupt. We have a known liar, murderous, wicked criminal who has a history of murdering people and lying out in the open to the face of American people is one of the two major nominees to become the president of the United States, the leader of the United States, Mrs. Hillary Clinton. What a criminal, folks. I'm hard-pressed to name many more past potential presidential candidates who were as criminal as this woman, okay? It's absolutely incredible that the Democratic Party has allowed itself to become taken over by such a gang of murderous, lying criminals as Hillary Clinton, who just is a law unto herself. So that's why I'm for Trump, by the way. As you can bet, I'm for the guy shaking up the establishment. They're going to badmouth him in the media because they cannot control this guy. And we need somebody as powerful as him, as a billionaire, to go out there and shake up this corrupt system that has taken foot in America. So, but for the most part, we'll give you answers, folks. First, I believe that there is no law requiring you and me and the average American to follow and pay the federal income tax. All you got to do is go on YouTube and type in Joe Bannister or Joseph Bannister, and his speech at our 2000 Freedom Rally at Freedom Law School will come up, and it gives you the whole story for you in less than an hour and a half. All there. I will send you the audio CD of his speech for you free, along with our free Freedom Education Package. So you can check it out for yourself and read about freedom and your rights. If you go to our website, sign up to get on our email list, I will give you that by mail, and you're going to get 1 year of free freedom law education, folks. Absolutely free. We thank you. Okay? And I want you once a month, you're going to get that, folks. Education that will not find other places. Freedom Law School is unique. And Freedom Law School has a track record of winning against IRS and corrupt government agents and agencies. I mean, think about it, folks. Just the fact that Freedom Law School has been at this for over 20 years, the IRS has tried and to shut me down and close me down, not to say about all this. That says a lot right there, because they've closed out, folks, scores of organizations, folks, in a tax honesty movement who've been trying to expose the income tax fraud. Not with Freedom Law School. They approached Freedom Law School, but they backed off because they know what I do is I teach about the law. I empower you with the law. I empower you with the knowledge of the law and the proper lawful procedures to assert and defend your rights. Rights and procedures that you should have been taught in high school, but were not taught. You will learn them here at Freedom Law School. You will get at Freedom Law School the education that you have been looking for and the answers, the freedom answers and solutions that you have been looking for. That's why, in addition to many freedom courses which I had developed in the late 1990s, Now, for the last 15 years, I provide programs like the Royal and the Simple Freedom Packages, which provide also, in addition to education, unlimited support, consultation, help get the responses you need to send out to these crooks in the IRS and government to get them off your back, as well as collective political action to restore the rule of law and the Constitution in America. So, folks, congratulations. You found this unique source. Tell your friends about it, family members, coworkers, about Freedom Law School, folks. And it's time to get America back. We are in the midst of a Great Depression. It's not a recession. They'll lie to you again. I predicted, along with Congress and Ron Paul, Peter Schiff, and a few others, way back in 2004-5, that Great Depression is coming. It's going to be deep. Great Depression, we were overdue since the 1930s, and it's a long Great Depression. I predicted back then, and I'll tell you now, that this Great Depression will last about 15, 20 years. Here we are, maybe about halfway, or maybe less than halfway into it. American people got elected this liar, Obama, who claimed that he was a change you can believe in. Oh, yeah. American people got change. A face change. A different race person at the head. But had the same policies, same corruption, and same criminalities that under George Bush went on, and Bill Clinton and the father, George Bush Sr., continued under Obama and will continue under Hillary Clinton, the wicked woman. So, what I'm going to do is I'm going to open this call to your question, any freedom law questions you have. Then I will talk a little bit more about the subject I talked about last week. Last week, I talked about how to buy a home without a tax return, because generally banks almost always want a tax return to verify your income to be able to qualify for a bank loan. If you don't file a 1040 income tax confession form, no bank loan. Without a bank loan, you cannot get a home, because most people do not have $100,000 or $200,000 or $500,000 or more to buy a house cash. They gotta put a part of it down and borrow most of it. But you can buy a house without a bank loan, a tax return, credits, or use of your slave surveillance number, your SSN. You don't have to use it. We talked about it last week. I will talk about it some more tonight. But first, I'm going to be going to your questions, folks, that you may have about any freedom questions and issues that you got. Once I have your freedom questions answered, then after that, I will be talking about the issue of how to buy a home without a tax return. So with that, let's go to our first caller from area code 530. And to protect your privacy, folks, only give me your first name and your state that you call from. Do not give me your last name, okay? That's not necessary at all to protect your privacy. So call from area code 530. If you have a question, give me your first name.
Yes, I have a few questions.
Yes. What is your name first? What is your first name, sir? Hello? Are you there, my friend? I cannot hear you. The gentleman from area code 530 with a few questions. I cannot hear you at all. Can you hear me? Okay, I cannot hear you at all, my friend. So I'm going to come back to you to see what's going on. Maybe you can fix your phone problems. You probably muted yourself by a mistake or something. You must have hit the button to do something like that. Let me go to other calls. I will come back to you momentarily. Let's go to the call from area code 35. Call from area code 352. If you have a question, please give me your first name and the state you're calling from, and then your question. Okay, the call from area code 352 does not have a question. We have a call from area code 916. Now, I know that's Sacramento, California, because I used to live in Southern California before I came to Florida a couple years ago. So do you have a question, my friend, you want to ask me? So please ask me now.
Yes, my name is Al. I'm from Riverside, but I used to live in Sacramento. But this is my question. It's the same question I wanted to ask last week in regards to the shootings. And you said that you didn't read up on that or you didn't know anything about it. So my question in regards to the shootings that took place, where two black men were killed by the hands of law enforcement. If you have any thoughts in regards to that.
Well,
I have had the opportunity and made the time to educate myself so far about one of those occasions. The gentleman that was killed with his girlfriend, fiance, was in the car that she videoed it on live on Facebook. I haven't seen the other one. I want and need to be doing that to educate myself properly as to what happened there. First of all, let me tell you guys this, folks. I believe in America, we have too much doggone governments. We do not need all of this government at all levels. We do not need this entire federal government with the TSA and NSA and CIA and the FDA and all these alphabet soup agencies that take our rights away and abuse us, that have SWAT teams, okay? Folks, you know, these agencies, they all have SWAT teams. All of them do. But armed people with helmets and military gear to come and raid your house in case they need to. They have tanks, Homeland Security, which is to keep America inside safe. They have tanks, tank kind of equipment. What the heck for? What are you going to fight in America that you need tank-like equipment? Okay, we don't need that. But I also believe we do not need that much government at the state level or the local level of county and city level, okay? County sheriffs, you know, they have too many sheriffs out there giving you tickets for needless stuff, harassing you for needless stuff, for broken headlights or tail lights. The police thing is worse than the sheriffs, because they're not elected directly by the people, but elected by the city council members, the politicians. They're appointed, I should say. So we have too many policemen out there that we don't need, you know, that they sit down and drink coffee and kick back and relax, and to make themselves look like they're doing something, they stop people for minor traffic violations. So they look like they're working. They look like they have a job. You know, I tell you, I give you an example of that. You know, my own brother used to work for a computer division of a government agency in South Carolina about, oh, maybe 15 years ago or so. And after several years of boredom, I mean, literally boredom, this, you know, he was in private sector. He could not get a good job because he was not a U.S. citizen at the time. Couldn't get a good military contractor job because you can not get a security as a green card holder, as a permanent resident. He finally got a safe job at a government agency, and he left it because he was so bored. He said, "Hey, Mom, we got 10 people here doing the work of four. We were all trying to stay busy looking like we are working. We got no work to do. We're just bored." After a few years, he gave up that security. He said, "What the heck with it? I'm going to go do something that around me bored with my life." Okay? So many government agencies and the police have that. We got too many policemen. We don't need more policemen, okay? And so these policemen try to justify their job, and the cities who appoint these chief of police want more money. So one way easy for them to make money is to have these policemen become tax collectors for stopping people for needless tiny little crimes they come up with to stop you. They stop you, oh, for some excuse, and they say, "Let me get a driver's license, car registration, car insurance." Knowing that one out of 10 people, if not more, they don't have all those three things in place, and they could bust up the person if they want just for that alone, get a ticket for nothing. Because so many people are living in poverty, they cannot even afford car insurance. That's right, folks. I did it. I lived in California. Okay, all those years until I came to Florida, I did not have car insurance. I always somehow got around it. Okay, somehow or another, didn't get car insurance. Couldn't afford it. Literally couldn't afford car insurance. Didn't have car. Okay, I drop other people's cars. So, you know, what happened in the case of a gentleman who his fiance after he was shot, you know, on FaceTime, sent a video, put it out there. So apparently, it was just one of those needless situations. You know, I'll give you an example. I was stopped myself in California, myself, for having a headlight beat out, a taillight beat out, you know, and then harassing for those things. One of my friends was stopped in California because he had a broken, window, front window. On the bottom right of his window was a crack. Well, that was not interfering with his vision of the street, but that was enough excuse for the cop to stop and harass him in Los Angeles. So it's all over America, folks. So this poor guy was stopped because, oh, supposedly, I guess his taillight was out. Okay. Now, the taillight, at most, you know, I don't think cops should bother people for that stuff at all, period. Okay. At most, I think the cop should do what any good neighbor would do. Pull up next to the guy, roll up his window, and say, hey, buddy, your taillight is out. I just want to let you know so you can fix it. Have a great day. That is it. That's all a policeman should be doing. Don't even stop you. Just go by, hey, buddy, your taillight is out. Your spotlight is out. Hey, your tires look a little bit low. You need more air, you know? Your gas cap is off. Just be a good neighbor. But instead of doing that approach of being a good neighbor, that the policemen are supposed to be there to serve the public, like on the cars of so many policemen, it says, serve, right? Something to serve. To protect and serve. They're not protecting you. From what? How is a broken taillight stopping you protecting from what? You can just tell the guy without stopping him and wasting his time. And who you're serving? Maybe the tax collection of the politician of your city? The cops to stop this guy, this black man and his fiance. So, of course, you know, they think that this guy might be a threat. Apparently, this part of the video doesn't show. Apparently, his fiance says he had a concealed carry permit, which is a permit to carry a gun and not in visible view. He's not seen. Well, the guy that does that, obviously, is the guy that wants to follow the law. You know, because if you have a right to keep and bear arms, in my opinion, without a need to get a permit, that's what the Second Amendment means. You don't need permission to carry a gun. But this guy is trying to do what he can to get the permit anyhow, just so that the government authorities, the police, will not give him a hard time, harass him. So to do get that permit, you go through some background checks. They check you out a little bit, make sure you have no criminal history, stuff like that. Well, obviously, you passed it. I mean, when I was in California, in San Bernardino County, semi-rural county, and my neighbor wanted to get a concealed carry permit, and the sheriff came and talked to me about it. I said, hey, he's a good guy, no problem. Give him a gun. That's great, you know. They check you out. So this guy went through the process, was checked out by the police. That in itself should let the policeman know, hey, this guy, you know, can't be a drug dealer very likely, or something, because he probably would not pass the test or apply for the test. Because he's a drug dealer, and criminals don't want to deal with the police at all. But anyhow, so apparently, the fiance said he wanted to reach out to get his driver's license out of his pocket. I don't know, or his glove compartment wasn't clear from what I saw or heard. I don't remember. But anyhow, apparently, the policeman at that time shot 4 bullets, not one, not 2 or 3, about 4, maybe 5. According to this lady, bullets into his right arm area, which apparently Some of them went into his chest, either through his arm into his chest or directly into his chest. I mean, right, your right arm is right by your chest, your lungs and heart. So this lady started videoing it, and the guy was, as you could visibly tell, was in a coma state. I mean, his eyes were up there, poor guy. I mean, here you see this guy literally died in front of you. I mean, you know, so, and apparently the guy went, the guy went to Maker, and the cop is yelling at the poor lady, you know. So they take her out, they arrest her. Oh, what did she do? You know, except be witness to a murder. But you know what? I want to tell you, not only that is wrong, that is crime. Absolutely no doubt. You know, if I were the district attorney in that county, I would that cop charged with murder. First class murder. You know, when the you don't have this guy, you're not suspicious of driving because he's suspicious he's a murderer, convicted murderer, rapist, violent criminal, or even a drug dealer. You're stopping the guy because of a taillight. It doesn't take a criminal mind for your taillight to go out. That's just a mechanical device. So you're not dealing with a criminal. You don't have to be on guard. You're going to shoot somebody at all. What the heck? And, you know, so the guy says that. He says, well, hold on. You know, the guy says, the concealed weapon. Well, the guy's telling you. He's been honest with you. You say, okay, fine, hold on. Tell me first where it is. Okay. So I need to see your ID, but I want you to slowly, you tell me what your ID is and get it out so I can just slowly give you ID first. They'll reach for the gun, tell you where it is later on. You know, some civilized way the guy could have talked to the guy about the situation. He didn't have to be go by his reaction of just shoot the poor guy up to death. Okay, that's what's wrong in America. America has become no longer the land of the free, the home of the brave. It's become the land of the meek and home of the indentured. When I was a kid in Iran in the 1960s and 70s, we used to decry and criticize the communist Soviet Union, where the political people, the communists, have taken control of that country and the people have no freedoms. They were ruled by the political class. Well, guess what? The Soviet Union is dead. It's broken apart. There's no more communism in the Eastern Europe or Soviet Union. Even communist China is not communist anymore. My brother works there. He married a Chinese woman as a foreigner, and he pays no income tax. Income tax is the one that's goals or plans the communist manifesto. They don't have it there. We have it in America. We're the new communists. America and Western Europe, the European Union, are the new communist socialist republics. We have big government here that abuses the people, that shoots people at whim like they did to this young black man. Not only that, you know, America used to be thought of as a beacon of the hope of the world, beacon of freedom, example, shining example of freedom and prosperity, peace on the hill. Now, America is despised, and rightfully so despised, by people of the world as the great oppressor, the warmonger, the criminal that murders people with drones and airplanes and rockets indiscriminately. Folks, you saw what happened to that young black man? Obama and Bush and Clinton did that to Libyans, Iraqis, and Syrians by the hundreds of thousands to the millions. Far worse than that young man. They do to young children as well and babies, blowing their legs and arms apart of babies and children for life, maiming them and killing them. Both Clintons and the Bush and Obama, criminal murderers. People who serve the ruling banking elite class, that own the politicians and own the major media of this country. So I think we got to wake up and recognize we got to send these criminals that run this country packing home, you know, at all levels, the federal government, state, and local. We need to have people that actually represent the people. So we need to start getting involved and understand what's going on with the local politics of our area and the government, federal government, at all levels, and elect people in office that actually are good people, not the ones with the biggest advertising budget to reach us. So does that help you a little bit with that question, my friend?
Yeah, that does. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Anything else you want to ask me?
No.
Very good, my friend. Thank you for your question, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to discuss this major incident that was reported in the news.
Thank you.
Let's go to a caller we have from area code 352 to see if the caller from area code 352 has a question. If so, my friend, please give me your first name and your state and your question, please. Okay, no question. I just want to add a few more comments, folks, about the cost of how to buy a home with our tax return. I gave you guys the basics of it last time about how you can buy a home with our tax return. One of the key things of it, though, that I did not talk about, I'll talk about tonight, is you cannot buy any home from anybody. You have to buy a home that a motivated seller has to sell, okay? A motivated seller is someone who really wants to sell the house and is having trouble selling the house quickly. There's problems why they cannot sell the house quickly, or he's in a very extra rush hurry, or something that motivates the person to want to sell the house quickly. For example, a couple getting a divorce. They don't get along. They got so much going on there. One of the spouses is in a hurry to get things done. They got their issues why they want to get this done quickly. They don't want to deal with each other. Separate. That's a motivated seller situation. Someone passed away. The children take over the house. They don't have any more monthly payments on the house because there's nobody living in there. They don't have to pay out of the pocket. And they don't have the money, perhaps. So maybe the kids are unemployed or underemployed, don't have much money. Or some of them are unemployed. The other ones don't want to pay the share of the other siblings. But they want to sell the house quickly. Don't have to look for a renter. Renters want to stay in the house at least 6 months, generally speaking. So they'd rather get rid of it quickly. That's an example. Another example, someone who has to leave because he got a job in a different state, for example, a faraway distance, and they don't want to have two mortgage and or rents, one in a new location, one at the old house. So they want to get rid of the house. Now, a lot of situations where the person cannot sell their house because the house is uninhabitable for some reason. Maybe has electrical problems, which cannot pass inspection. We cannot sell the house. It's got some serious electrical problems. The real estate agents would not list it often. Or you cannot even flush the toilets. There's some serious issues with the toilet not flushing. You know, they don't know what it is. The plumber cannot fix it. You know, maybe a deep septic problem or something. You know, or a roof is leaking really bad. Well, the house is leaking a lot of fixing, bad shape. Holes in the walls, dirty, stinky carpets and floors, messed up, a lot of stuff. Boards are coming up off the walls, a lot of repairs. It hasn't been repaired for a long time, taking care of the house for a long time, you know. And maybe they got lost a job. All kinds of situations exist out there. And a lot of people know situations that people want to need to unload the house. The monthly payment they can't afford to have. And they come in there and take over that situation, relieve them of their monthly payment liability they have, relieve them of having to default on the loan with a bad credit that will not let them buy another house. Okay? You can help them out by taking that burden off the shoulder. So there are motivated sellers out there. You just got to find them. They're there. So anyhow, the course on how to buy a home without a tax return, whether you want to live in it or just do it as an investment. If you can do it without the use of your slave surveillance number, you don't need no credit, no bank loan, your privacy, estate planning included. And folks, you can do it and be very happy that you did. It's available for $130 plus $10 shipping from Freedom Law School. If you want to get the course, send $140 cash only to Freedom Law School, right on there. You can get the form on our website at livefreenow.org, Freedom Law School's website, livefreenow.org. If you have any questions, you can call Freedom Law School at 813-444-4800, and the course will be sent out to you right away. We have another caller, I think, from area code 530. I think he's back. Let's see if he can, could not hear him before. Call from area code 530. Do you have any questions, my friend, if you want to ask?
I do. My name is Mike, and I'm in California.
Okay, Mike. Very good. You got some questions to ask me, my friend? Go ahead.
I have several of your binders worth of information, and one of them they talk about when the CHP tows your car and how that's not lawful. And I wanted to go over that real quick.
Okay.
I mean, the way I understand it is they have the right to remove it, but they don't have the right to turn it over to the courts.
Hold on. Want you to, before we go on, I did that course about 20 years ago, and I've not been flying traffic tickets much in the last, over last 15 years or so. So I'm a little bit rusty on those areas. So I'm a little bit slow. Please indulge your patience, but I'll do my best to help you with your questions on this subject, my friend. Yes, what about it? They've not torn your car. What about it?
Well, the way I understand it is the CHP does have the authority to remove your car, but they don't have the authority to turn it over to a third party and allow them to profit. Is that accurate?
Yes.
So then how do I go about arguing that point?
I don't have the exact thing to tell you. When I fought those situations myself, it was about 15 years ago. And I understand and believe those laws have been modified since then. So I don't have the answer to that for you. But to go to a law library, what you want to do is go to a law library and look up the law that they claim they do it under and do an annotated section search. Okay? Annotated searches, which means that you look up all the court cases about that code section that interpret that law. Okay. Now let's see. For example, what was the car towed for, by the way? What was your car towed for?
$12,500 a.
What does that mean?
Driving without a valid driver's license and no registration.
What's that?
Driving without a valid driver's license and no registration.
Okay. Because I tell you something, illegal aliens from Mexico cause, a lot of them hard workers, and you got some criminal elements in them also that do rape and murders. A lot of jails are full of them and get a lot of welfare checks and drain the taxes, the taxpayers' fund in California. But one of the few benefits that they do offer is that California, in January 2012, they've so many illegal aliens did not have driver license, they passed a law that the police can no longer impound your car at sobriety checkpoints if your only offense is driving without a license. Okay, under the old law, if you're an unlicensed driver, they could impound your car for 30 days and charge you thousands of dollars in fees. Okay? So, now they say that a person driving without a license, they allow you to call a licensed person to come take your car home.
Right.
Okay? So, That being the case, what was it that they, don't give me the code section, give me the plane thing. What was the excuse of them taking your car?
Well, the initial stop was speeding, a 48 and a 35.
Speeding, okay, got it, okay.
And
okay.
A question I have is, since I was pulled over for the speeding, isn't it a violation of the Fourth Amendment that they found out that I didn't have a driver's license and then prosecuted me with that and did not prosecute any sort of a speeding violation?
Well, no. It's gotten worse than that. If they have a lawful excuse to stop you, well, you see, in my opinion, see, depends on whose interpretation, because the Supreme Court justices, over time, they chip away more and more of the Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment language is very clear. You know,
right.
Let me bring it up. I'm going to bring my the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution. Right there. What does it say? It's very simple. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, and property and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. There you go. So unreasonable search and seizure of your person, house, and papers, and your car is your an effect. Okay? The car is obviously, you know, one of your effects.
Right.
But what's unreasonable? Oh, the courts have just bent over backward more and more to let the policemen do that. Okay? The excuse was that, well, they stopped me for speeding. Well, at the same time, they have a right to check, make sure you're able, you have a law, you have a driver's license. Otherwise, you know, why are you speeding? So now they get their, they got the nose of the camel under the tent to check on your papers, driver's license, car registration, and then car insurance.
And
which car insurance was not mandatory until about 20, 30 years ago, you know, in America. It wasn't mandatory. That's when it started to make it mandatory in America. In most of the states, they made it mandatory, I believe. I don't think all of them are. Maybe a couple of states are not mandatory yet. So anyhow, that's when they did that. And then, so that's how they get into that whole situation of your driver license and registration. But he said, what did they have with you? What was the last thing that they got you on? What was it? Did they give you a ticket for what at the end? For speeding? So speeding. So that's what they said. The court said that they can do that, you know. I don't think so, because you have the license or not is irrelevant to your speeding. Having registration is relevant on your speeding. They have
exactly.
No other reason to say you're not registered because you have a tag on. The tag doesn't look fraudulent. Why should they bother with that?
Mm-hmm.
And about insurance, hey, if you have the if you're supposed to have it, you have it. No need to come and harass you about that. But the courts have given them the power to do so. So I think the whole thing, the whole arrangement is a violation of the Constitution and creates unnecessary confrontation when that black man got killed you saw about 10 days ago, you know, on YouTube, you all saw it yourself. So, and there was a decision recently by Supreme Court about 2 weeks ago, two, 3 weeks ago. And the four of the so-called conservative justices and one of the liberal justices said that, you know, you can search the man in this way. This guy was walked. He walked out of a house, which the cops were watching in Utah, and the house was under suspicion of whatever activity, drugs or whatever, but no conviction. So they stopped the guy. Hey, let me check your ID. Hey, there are no reason to stop the guy just because he got out of the house that the cops were watching.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hey, they don't, there's nothing illegal going in and out of the house. The house has not been convicted of being a criminal to associate with. You know, just watch the house. They had no reason to stop the guy, but they stopped
mm-hmm.
him. It was unreasonable to stop the guy and demand his ID. And from that illegal violation, They got his ID, ran on the system, found there was a traffic warrant for his arrest. And the traffic warrant arrest, I think, led to the, oh, for that. And then they arrested the guy. And then because they arrested him, they searched him. When they searched him, they found drugs on him. And he got convicted. The Utah Supreme Court, to their credit, held the way the U.S. Supreme Court has held for over 200 years, that when you get a fruit from a poisonous tree, when the whole thing was started illegally in the first place, in that situation, you know, any fruits of that is illegal. They should not have stopped the guy in the first place.
Right.
He would just walked out of the house. That's it. There's no crime in that just because you walked out of the house. You know, just because somebody walks out of the house, arrest them and demand ID, you cannot do that. The police cannot stop you in the street and say, give you ID. But here we go now. We became communist Soviet Union. Stop anybody anytime on the street, demand their ID. Okay, now here we go. See, I'm saying America is the new communist Soviet Union. So demand that demand a person's ID, and as a result of that unconstitutional act, everything else that was down and went down was unconstitutional, but the court said it's okay. Majority said it's okay. So then the minority liberal ones in this case were the right ones, said that was wrong. So this is the cult of the state. These are people who are members of the cult of the government. The cult that believe the government is good. Government needs more power. Government should do this. Government should do that. Then the government is the answer to society's ills. Government is not the answer. Government is the problem. We have too much government. That's the problem. Yes, sir.
What about the other side of the question, in that they turn the car over to a third party to profit, you know, to a tow company?
That I totally agree with you. That's one of the things I agreed when I sued them. I sued the tow car companies and the CHP, Highway Patrolman, and the judges later on about it in my law in the courts. You know, the court just pooped when I made norm, just ruled against you because they don't want to hear it, you know, and they want to protect the system. And especially without a lawyer, they don't want to even talk to you at all.
Right. Okay, then my next question is about the best evidence rule. I had some evidence brought in by the district attorney that's based on fraud from the Department of Motor Vehicles, and it was admitted at the end of a witness's testimony. And like I say, it didn't meet the best evidence rule. What's the best way to argue that?
Just go and now you got my Freedom Lawsuits Traffic course?
Yes.
Okay. Good. Yeah, my appellate briefs on that issue. Do you have the level 2 course of Freedom Law School?
I got level 1, level 2, beat all traffic tickets, and the Social Security information.
Good, good. Mike, you have all the right courses. Good. I have that the briefs in that. On how to do an appeal, I think I have the appeal of that in there, of my own case, in which I had that issue on appeal argued. I think I do. Check if not, I gotta get this stuff scanned and put it on my website someplace for you guys. But
yeah,
I'll tell you what, it's not in there. The evidence code section, best evidence rule. You go to a law library and go on Westlaw or California Dearings Code or California West annotated codes. It's been so long in California. California Dearings or California, I think West. But yeah. So the annotated codes of California under that evidence code section, they'll give you court cases about the best evidence rule. You go and they give you an annotation, find a court case that is as close to factually similar to your case, and on appeal argue that. Hey, this case should be overturned because it violated the best evidence rule in my case, just like the other case, besides the other cases. that are like yours. On the appeal brief, that's what you want to do.
Okay. Next question is regarding jurisdiction. In the complaint, first, it wasn't verified, and there was no statement of jurisdiction. So in my opinion, that then does not establish jurisdiction, and without jurisdiction, we can't go forward. And I did file the David Plum's 10-page motion to abate, and then I filed some other pages, and I filed that actually twice. I filed it before arraignment without a case number, and then after arraignment with a case number.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had this representation of non-representation, talking about being a man. Do you have a claim against the man? So on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And all that was either denied or completely ignored.
Well, the last one, they can drop that, the man stuff. That won't go nowhere. Okay. But so you got convicted, you take it on appeal.
Well,
and are you
on appeal, do I just simply say that the complaint was in error, lacking a statement of jurisdiction?
The complaint does not need to have a statement of jurisdiction.
It doesn't.
No. There's no requirement.
Well, then,
only federal courts need to have that. State courts have automatic jurisdiction. Only federal courts, which are courts of limited jurisdiction, you have to tell the court how they have jurisdiction.
So then
okay.
How do I go about arguing jurisdiction in the appeal?
The fact that the complaint was not signed by a government prosecutor. And the court says only government prosecutor can bring an action in the name of the people.
Well, they did actually prepare a complaint. They didn't just give me the traffic ticket.
Oh, they did. Oh, they did say that, my friend.
Huh?
So there was a complaint filed by the district attorney against you.
Yes, but it wasn't sworn to under oath. You know, there was no affidavits attached, and there was no court report or help me out here. The person that puts the stamp.
There was no notarization, you mean?
Yeah, no notarization, no witness to it. There was no affidavit attesting to its accuracy and, you know.
Okay. The way you do it is this, my friend. Again, I'm a little rusty on those things. All
yeah.
I gotta do is what I did back about 20 years ago. I'm 53. How old are you, Mike?
Say again?
I did these 20 years ago. I'm 53 now.
Right.
How old are you now?
I'm 53.
Same age as me. Go to a law library and all these annotated code sections that relate to this stuff, look them up. And find cases similar to your case, you know, in those court cases and cite those on the appeal. So they're wrong on the why they did you wrong. That's what you got to do.
Understood.
I don't have those court cases to give you, to be honest with you. You know, but as you find them, argue that issue. If you don't find the court cases that back up your position, don't argue that. Argue the other positions that you got a good solid win. You know, good courts backing you up.
Mm-hmm. Okay, next question. Traffic stop and they arrest you under California Code Section 40510, you claim that they can't collect a bail. I don't understand that.
What?
I mean,
you go
I read
to courts,
the code section.
What I'm saying is that when you go to courts, like I remember back in Los Angeles,
yes.
When you got a traffic ticket, you went to court. If you pled not guilty, they force you to pay the ticket. Post bail before you get a trial date. Well, they cannot force you to pay without being found guilty first. Well, the way they try to get around it, say, oh, you're not paying the fine, you're paying the bail, your security. So if you don't show up, you know, you just forfeit the bail, so you show up the trial. But in effect, it is the bail amount is the same as the ticket. But they're not supposed to have you pay the ticket first. Before you get a trial, you have a right to trial. You have a right to trial without having to pay anything. But they're trying to get around it by saying, oh, you're just paying the bail. That's what they're doing. But the law says in California, you are supposed to have a right to trial without having to pay for it. You have the right to trial, period. You don't have to pay anything.
Okay. Then my next question a commissioner under Code Section 72190 is an ex officio judiciary, and they cannot rule on a motion. And I read that, and is the argument of that just simply that they are an ex officio judiciary and they can't rule on a motion? I mean, is it that simple, that basic?
They cannot rule on a motion or be a judge in a case without both parties' consent.
I didn't hear that.
That's what matters. They got to have the consent of both parties. Do you agree to it or not? They cannot. Can you hear me better now?
Yes.
Okay. They cannot have the commissioner be the judge of your case unless you agree to it. If you agree to it, he'll be your judge. Otherwise, he cannot be your judge. It's your choice. So, yes, he cannot be the judge to rule on your motions unless you both parties agree to it.
Right, and I did not. It was at the arraignment, and it was without a record, and I objected to the commissioner, and I objected to him ruling on the motion, and I also, my last words out of my mouth is, I void all actions of this court as they are unlawful.
Well, you cannot do that. You can just object and reverse it on appeal.
Well, but see, and that's where I'm at, is I want to reverse it on appeal. That's another issue I want to bring up on appeal, is the fact that the commissioner ruled on the motion, and he doesn't have the authority to do that.
Right. Now, that is a good argument.
And he doesn't have the authority to do that under Code Section 72109, but it basically says, the only thing I found in there that's arguable is that he's an ex officio judiciary,
He's not a judge. That's simple. He's just simply not a judge.
And only a judge can rule on a motion.
Only a judge can rule on a motion unless you agree to
Now, in the minute orders of that day, they actually, the commissioner says, that he entered a plea of not guilty for me, and then the next line down says that the defendant entered a plea of not guilty. I did not do that. But there's no record. But I did have a friend in court with me that day.
Mm-hmm.
How do I go about arguing or presenting that?
Great question, because that's one of the things I did not know back then. What you do is very simple. So simple, but nobody taught me that back then. All you do is write up a declaration for your friend. You get a piece of paper with a caption of the court case, right on the right side, declaration of your friend, Joe Schmo, whatever. And below that you write, you're Joe Schmo, your friend's name, declare the following, that I was in court at such date at this location of where the ticket of my friend Mike was being called, blah, 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 and my friend's case was called. Mike was called, and we went up there. This was said, and this is what happened. Then you sign, I declare the above to be true and correct to the best of my personal knowledge on the penalty of perjury laws of the state of California. Date and sign. And you attach that.
And I can justify that with the appeal?
That's right. You can attach it to the appeal.
Okay. And that's enough right there to get it overturned, isn't it?
Well, you ought to be the problem. That should have been brought up at the trial level, ideally. Okay, but you argue, you make a motion to attend that to the appeal. You make a motion to court to accept that because there was no transcript of that hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So because there's no transcript of the hearing, you're attaching his declarations. Instead of a transcript. So you can make a declaration yourself of that too, on top of him, both of you.
I had a comment about the transcript or not being a transcript. I can't remember. Okay, so then my next question is in regards to due process. Prior to when, if you're involved in a traffic stop and they decide to I use the word kidnap. I know it's arrest. And they don't take you in front of a magistrate at the earliest possible opportunity, and they take you in, they put you in the holding cell, take your picture and fence, and charge you a bail to get out. It's my understanding that that's a violation of due process under, I think it's California Vehicle Code 40302. It says very specifically that they have to take you without reasonable delay. But in the case of Hendry versus the county of Shasta, it says they can take you to the jail. They can't take you into the jail, and they can take you to the jail for identification purposes.
No, my friend, thanks for doing a good job reading the court cases. I remember that court case. I haven't looked at it for a long time. Yes?
Before you thank me for doing the work, thank yourself, because I got that Hendry case from you.
I know you did, but I'm glad you read it. You did your homework. See, people get courses from me, and sometimes they don't study them. You did study what I gave you, but again, I haven't studied that court case for over 15 years, so I'm not fresh on that in my mind to discuss it really intelligently. But bottom line is that if they arrest you, so they're supposed to be a magistrate at all times. I mean, let's face it. If they want to get Sunday afternoon, Saturday night, get a warrant to get inside somebody's house, let's say drug warrants. Guess what? They're a magistrate. Then they go and he signs the paper. They go inside this guy's house. So I don't care if it's a weekend, Saturday, Sunday, 2 o'clock in the morning, they have a magistrate they can go to. They say they don't, but they do. There's somebody who's still, even if it means it goes to the magistrate's home, they can do that.
The Tri-City, they don't want to have. Is there a ruling that will support that they're supposed to have a magistrate or a judge on duty?
They don't, because if they do not have one, like you live in a small county, very small population, that would be different. Okay? But in all the bigger cities, they have one. Well, what city do you live in, Mike? Riverside?
California.
What city area? Riverside area?
No, actually, I live in the Lake Tahoe Basin, so it is a rural area, and there isn't somebody here. But what they did when they kidnapped me out of my front yard, and they took me out of the original county into a foreign county and then back into the original county that was more than 100 mile distant from my front yard. And when I look up kidnapping, it uses those words. If they take you from the original county into a foreign county and back into the original county, that's three different counts of kidnapping. And then the fact that it was a distant, I forget the way they say distant, that would be the fourth count of kidnapping. And then kidnapping is a terrorist activity. And
labeling you guys about kidnapping. I mean, I agree that why should they get from county to county and waste the time and sit in the car and back the car? That's not right. I agree with you on that, but I want to be careful with those labels. Don't get carried away, because those are conclusory remarks, on that. They shouldn't have done that. But anyhow, the thing is, what I would do on the California Public Records Act, write to the county court and ask, hey, give me the list of all the magistrates of this county and the shifts that they worked. 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, shift. Who were the judges during the last 2 years, whatever that time period, that year you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Give me a copy of documents that shows that. Don't ask answers. Ask for documents. Send me a copy of documents that shows who were the magistrates in this county during that year, and show me which magistrate worked at what time. And in particular, I want to know the document that shows on this day, who was the magistrate at this time?
Right.
They are supposed to give it to you. We'll give it to you. And then you could use that to prove that at the time that they took you to prison, they had a magistrate. They had a magistrate, and it was his name, Joe Schmo. He was a magistrate at the time. They were taking it to him, but they didn't. They took him to jail. There was a magistrate available. You get a county government document that says that there was a magistrate available.
Understood. Do you know if I think there is a Supreme Court ruling that says they're required to have a magistrate on duty 24/7? Do you happen to know that?
No, there is no Supreme Court ruling on that issue because it's not a Supreme Court issue. You know, that was a state law issue. Challenge for state law provides for that. No, there is no law that says they have to have a magistrate all the time. Look, think a California 1870, Wild West days.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There was hardly anybody living out there. Okay? There was a part-time judge who between several different counties.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So they didn't have a magistrate all the time. There was no traffic tickets. So there's no requirement that they have to have one if there's enough workload there to have a full-time judge or magistrate all the time. So, but they will have one, obviously, if your population of the county or city that they serve the area is large enough that they have enough criminal activity going on that they may need a magistrate at all different times, so they get one.
Mm-hmm.
Sacramento, L.A., San Francisco, San Jose, you know, they all got those things, okay? But little town lakes out, they may not. I don't know. You got to get those records. You see, the county has it or not. There's no requirement that they have one 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Well, you know what, as I think about it, I think I may have used the wrong words in referring to that Supreme Court ruling. I think maybe the mm-hmm. words were the courts are open 24/7.
The courts don't have to be open 24/7 either.
Okay.
The courts are open 9 to 5.
Don't take my tail on that one.
You cannot, no, you cannot do that either.
All right. I'm
again, stay in California, 1870. You said the judge couldn't have his Sunday off. You know, but they would have harassed people for nothing back in 1870. They would have put you in weekend over jail over nothing, right?
Right.
You got arrested on Friday, wait till Monday, you know, if they were they try to get you out handled that day if they couldn't sure. Not hold you up over the weekend. But that may happen, unfortunately.
Okay, changing subjects. I'd like to ask what kind of how's a guy get a bank account without being FDIC insured? What I'm trying to do is get out of the eye, out from underneath the eyes of the government, and I'd like to have
I don't think you can anymore. In America, you know, there is no such thing as financial privacy anymore. The Supreme Court killed that in U.S. versus Mrs. Miller. That have been in our Freedom Catalog I cite for you, level one course I'll talk about in more detail. Dead, they killed it a long time ago. You know, in the land of the free, home of the brave, you have no real financial privacy unless you only use cash and or barter. That is
right.
According to the explicit words of the U.S. Supreme Court in the Miller case, which crookedly claimed that because bank employees are strangers to you, and they see what's on your checks, and you don't mind these bank employees see what's on your checks, you don't mind the government seeing what's on your checks either. You gave up your privacy voluntarily. Now, by the way, that's the same lying logic that NSA has been trying to use in court to say why your internet records, email records, all those things that you give to Verizon and your telephone internet company to give you access to internet, all those things because you give it to them, the Verizon and AT&T, and they see it, therefore you don't mind the government and NSA getting it either. That's the same lying logic they use there, which of course didn't buy because that was just way, way too sensitive to too many American people that maybe cannot do that. But with your bank account, decades ago, they got rid of that. They did that.
What still on the same subject, what about these internet banks? They're not, or even, you know, I was talking to a friend about this, and they suggested going to an Indian casino because the Indian casino is a sovereign outside the United States.
They're semi-sovereign. They're not fully sovereign.
What does semi-sovereign mean?
Yes, they're not as sovereign as they used to be. You know, what happened is that, you know, let's face it, America originally belonged to the Indians, you know, 1600s, 1700s.
Right.
This is their land. The white man took it from them by force and fraud and murder. And by late 1800s, they completely conquered, repeatedly, all the American Indian people. They took all the land. They forced them to do these reservations in the most desolate, horrendous areas in Arizona, New Mexico, and Dakota. These places were either hot, too hot, or too cold. They put them on those kind of lands by force. Then by I think it was 1925, they said these people who are nobodies, they have no citizenship, no nothing. They were nomads. They're not Americans, nothing. They made them U.S. citizens, you know. And they gradually, the American Indians are the poorest minority in America. The richest minority in America are the Jews. The poorest by far is the American Indians, and they're so hungry because the way of life was destroyed. You know, they lived on buffalo. The buffalo was destroyed, and they had no connections, no roots in the modern white man's world. The poor and the blacks and Mexicans. So they became in need of government assistance, white man's assistance, for them to survive. And so that's what they've been doing a lot of that. Now, the gambling casinos helped them some of those tribes, but and they have more sovereignty than they understand, but those are very cautious. They also don't want to, you know, get, you know, too much trouble. And so they do have more sovereignty. And I think some of my tribe do those things, open a bank in American Indian nations. And that could be done. I'm not sure if anybody has done anything like that recently.
Well, I don't know anybody that's done that. It was some financial experts that made that suggestion.
Well, I'm just Googling bank on Indian reservations.
Well, it's actually the Indian casinos, the way they said it, because the casinos.
Well, India got to be bank. Casinos are not a bank.
Right. Well, that's, yeah.
Okay. Anything else, Mark? Any other questions?
Oh, I did have one more quick question. In the BDN traffic ticket now, the fourth CD has a poor sound quality. It's breaking up and stuff. Can I send it somewhere and ask for a replacement?
You know, that's a good question. I'd be happy to replace it for you. And I hope that my new CD that will replace the CD will be as good, if not better. Let me try to make a note about that to see which one it is and set that. It's the Traffic Course CD number 4.
Yeah.
Okay.
The one where Nadine offers her new system. I can't even understand what she's saying.
Okay, Nadine. Okay, yeah, the trial by declaration, right?
Okay.
Right, that's you not having to go to trial.
Yeah. Not going into the building.
Right. Now you say the trauma is
in writing. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, tell you what. Give me tomorrow to check on the audio course. First,
okay.
To see if the CD that I got, then maybe the master is bad. If the master is bad, I would have to have the sound quality improved on the master CD. Send that, you know, and then duplicate the new CD with the better sound to send to you, because all the other ones made out the same master, so they all may be poor quality, my friend. You know.
I got you.
And that's a product I got improved some of the sound and some of the CDs, because that craft was like 1997, like it's close to 20 years old, so that could be the case. So yeah, let me check on that, see if I can do that for you. Okay.
Okay.
So give me till so tomorrow's Friday. Call Monday, okay? And check on that. And when you call, let whoever answers the phone, you talk to me about. Let them know you got the courses. You and I talk on the conference call, and by that time we'll know what's going on.
I could also just send you a message on Facebook if that makes you happy.
No, I don't.
Okay. Facebook. What number would you like me to call you at then?
You can leave a call right now. Leave a message on our voicemail. That's fine. Leave a detailed message about this. And we'll check in the morning. Yeah, that we don't have to worry about. Just call right now when you get off. Leave a detailed message, and whoever gets it, we can write it down. All the details, please give it your name, phone number, everything, and all the details of the problem. We'll check on and get any calls back on Monday, okay?
Great.
And I appreciate you bringing this problem to my attention. Thank you. I do appreciate you bringing it to my attention, Mike.
Sure, my pleasure. But I didn't get the number.
A regular number of Freedom Law School, 813-444-4800.
Okay. Then I'll give you a call sometime Monday, and we'll go from there.
Yes. Yes, you got it, my friend.
In finishing up here, I just want to say thank you for everything you do. I've been very successful with your information 8 different times. I've had different traffic situations with the beating traffic ticket now situation. Or information, the David Plum thing, and had 8 different situations just dismissed. The problem for me now is I'm in my home county, and they've got it out for me, and they're just, running, they're just performing a railroad operation. So,
well, let me tell you, Mike, first of all, I really thank you for your kind words about me and Freedom Law School, and number two, I applaud you for taking the time to learn and study it and use the stuff successfully. That tells me you actually did what I intended to do, for people. You actually listen and learn and use this stuff successfully. I want to see a lot more people like you, Mike, to win. So that's very, to me, it's great. I love to see that. It makes me happy that the work I'm doing is producing real results for real people like you. Now, Mike, what I'd like to suggest you consider is you upgrade to the Simple FEMA package, because I created a Simple FEMA package for people precisely like you, because you're someone who is willing and able to do the work yourself, but you need help and guidance. So far, you've done it yourself, like you said, 8 times. On different traffic ticket situations, you've done well, great. But now they're ganging up on you. They're putting the pressure on you from different directions, more serious. Now I need a little bit more extra help to get these guys off of you. With a Simple FEMA package, my friend, you're going to get unlimited consultation on a private basis. You can send me your paperwork, my friend. I will read them. I will review them. I'll discuss them with you. And I will guide your legal research. Much more like, hey, go do this, go do that, look for this, look for that, read this. You go back, research it, read it. Give me the, if you want, even send me your brief, your court case, so we can discuss it a little bit more. Hey, do this, do that. I'll guide you through so you can win, my friend. And you're going to get credit for what you paid for the courses you got already taught in Simple FEMA package.
Right.
If you can do it full, do it full. If you're not doing it full, I'll let you make payments, my friend. That's not an issue. Because the first year is more, $4,000. Yeah, what's that?
$4,000?
$4,000 minus what you paid for these 4 courses. You got level 1, level 2, traffic ticket course, and a social security course, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So that you're going to get credit for those 4 courses, which is $900.
Gotcha.
So that would be $3,100 balance. You can do it at one time, would be great, better. If you need to make a payment, I'll work with you on that also.
Okay. Well, how about we just talk about that on Monday?
That's fine. You give it some thought, give it some consideration. We can talk about Monday also, my friend. You got it.
Great.
All right, Mike, anything else before I go out there? Anything? Other
just one quick note. I did drop by your house when you were out there off of 395, and I was pleasured enough to meet you, your wife, and your lovely daughter, and I just want to say that I felt really comfortable at your home, and I really appreciated meeting your family and you, and I think you're some really nice people, and I wish you weren't in Florida so I could drop by your house once in a while and say hi.
Well, thank you. I'll tell you what, it was a pleasure to meet you. I kind of remember meeting you, but I meet so many people,
my
apologize.
I was in a Subaru wagon, and my dog was in the car, and you complimented me on my dog because he was well-behaved.
Yes, I can't remember that, yes. Well, I tell you what, I left California, it's the Socialist Republic of California, came to Florida. I'm so glad I did. And I don't plan to come back to California, to be honest with you. If you go on, here, do this. Go on to Google, any internet search engine, and type in Index of Freedom. Oh, no, Freedom State Rankings.
Index of what?
Freedom State Rankings.
Freedom State Rankings?
Yes, I think that's the one that will come up. Yep. Go to freedominthe50states.org. Freedominthe50states.org. And if you go there, this organization has ranked all the 50 states in a level of freedom that they got. The least free states in America are, at the bottom of the pile, New York, New Jersey, California. Least free states. I think New York is the worst, and I'm not sure if California is number two or number three with New Jersey. You know, the freest states are the North and South Dakota, Oklahoma, Tennessee, New Hampshire, and then you got generally the central states are more, and southern states are more free also. Florida is middle ranking. I think Florida should be ranked a little bit higher. Because Florida is the one that doesn't have a state income tax. I like that. Mm-hmm. No corrupt franchise tax, but hungry franchise tax, but to harass you. That's a big plus right there. And Florida is pretty good in the gun rights also. I know some states are better, but pretty good on that also. And Florida got great weather. I love Central Florida. It's got great weather. I like also the greater Tampa area. You don't know, people don't know, but all the of the 35 major metropolitan areas in the United States, Tampa area is the lowest cost of all the 35 major metropolitan areas. So you can be like me in Spring Hill, about 30, 40 minutes north of Tampa Airport, right? International airports, but still be small town. You can get a three-bedroom house, two baths, backyard and a pool, clean neighborhood, no crime, no graffitis, no clean, for about $100,000, my friend.
Wow,
real house.
That's amazing.
Yes, that's like a Spring Hill. You can do that, and you got most everything's right there. You got everything you want, and it has the Central Florida Spring Hill area. Has it all, and your airport's not that far. Downtown Tampa's not that far. You have a far less traffic than you got in California. So get the heck out of California. Go to Texas, Florida, Nevada, many of the more, freedom-oriented states with good weather, too. You don't have to go to Dakota, which you freeze your butt, okay? Otherwise, the North and South Dakota are the two most freedom states in America. But you freeze your butt out there, I like the warm weather. If you like the cold weather, go there. If you like the warm weather, I like Florida better than Texas and Nevada. It gets too hot and too desolate, too dry. Texas gets too hot and too cold, or just too hot. Florida gets just perfect. Central Florida, we have 4 or 5 months of spring and 7 or 8 months of summer. Can't beat that. Cost of living is low. And you can get some land out here if you wanted to. Grow your own, fruits, vegetables, trees, your own chickens, cows, Land is not expensive out here, Central Florida. Northern Florida, too, by the way. So I would suggest you consider, moving out of California. But that's one thing, by the way, when you get on limited conservation, is I talk about these things about helping you live free. One of the things you can and should do is to leave oppressive, criminal, corrupt states like New York, New Jersey, California, and go to more freedom states like Florida, Texas, Nevada, or Dakotas that you enjoy. Okay.
I understand.
In fact, if you look at the map, what's interesting about electoral map?
Yeah.
Of the United States, you see that they say that the states the Democrats win are where the cities are. Cities are where the maps are controlled by the big media. Northeast and the West Coast. But with the Republicans win, more rural areas, farmers, ranches, closer closer to earth, to nature. You got Southern and Central America and the South are more Republicans. You know, that's what's going on. You know, the Hillary supporters are in California, New York, New Jersey. You know, I mean, Ted Cruz was wrong.
You really think Hillary has supporters?
Ted Cruz was right about New York values, you know. I know Trump beat him up over that, but Ted Cruz was right about New York values. They have no values. The New York City is the Sodom and Gomorrah. New York, California, New Jersey are the new corrupt Sodom and Gomorrah. You know?
Yeah.
They have no ethics and morals in those states. When they allow a wicked, lying, murderous, imported woman like Clinton to become their senator in New York, you know, this woman is a murderer, lying, wicked person from Arkansas. And the machine politics of that state is so corrupt, she became their U.S. senator. You know, so that tells you a lot about the people there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm not everybody, of course, but the majority of them, unfortunately.
I got you. You know, on a separate note, and I don't mean to be taking up time, if we need to get off the phone, I can shut up and go.
No, we got time, my friend. Go ahead.
I was fortunate enough for 3.5 years to date a woman from Tehran, and she was absolutely fabulous. I just was really in love with her, and she was a really good woman. We just ended up parting ways because it was a distance thing. We had 500 miles between us.
Well, maybe she may want to move to Texas or Florida with you.
No. Well, maybe. You know, maybe. I'm not really,
you know?
I'm not really ready to leave where I'm at. I've got a really good life where I'm at. So.
Well, think about it. Think about, you know, if you can take any, you got any home equity or investment, it'll go a lot farther over there, as you saw by the housing prices I told you. The number one expense in California, as you know, is housing prices, okay? It's incredibly expensive out there in the West Coast.
Especially here in the basin, you know, houses are really, like, you could get a two-bedroom, two-bath for $400,000, and it's a dump.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. I know. I lived in California, my friend, and I know that Northern California is worse than Southern California, which I lived at. I know. So unless you're a movie star, some rich person, why bother living? In fact, I'll tell you something. You know that I posted this on my Facebook page. California has the highest poverty rate in the entire country.
That's it.
Once you factor in the housing costs.
Yeah.
See, they say Mississippi is a poor state. Poor, lots of poor black folks. It's mostly black, mostly poor, Mississippi, you know. But Mississippi is actually richer than California because the housing cost is far lower in Mississippi than California. California is so expensive. So for the vast majority of Californians, they're poor because the housing is so expensive. So, you know, a lot of people can, you know, my wife is from Florida. You know, she, after many years, was able to convince me that everything worked out, timing, just like you. I wasn't ready to go to Florida. I wanted to go to Florida, but situation didn't work for me at the time. Timing, things were not right. But it took some time. The timing, everything fell in place. So I'm not saying move 2 months from now. I'm saying think about it. Make a plan 6 months from now, 2-3 years from now. If you want, you can make it happen. You know, look into it. But look into it first. Do an investigation. Do a checking out. You know, don't really have to rush into it. But think about, hey, you know, get the heck out here. Take all my home equity. Whatever you got out there, if you can do something. Especially if you have any skills. Let me tell you, in Florida, especially Central Florida, I know the Tampa area and Orlando area, there's a great shortage of skilled labor. Because this Tampa is a retirement community of the New Yorkers from Long Island, New York. Half the people I meet from here are from Long Island. Long Island emptied out. Because why? These people retire up there in New Jersey and New York with good pensions, making $500,000-$700,000 a month, which there wouldn't get them very far. So if you go and take their home equity, buy a house, your cash, no more house payment, low taxes. No state income tax, and with $500,000-$700,000 a month, live like a king.
Mm-hmm.
And live in nice warm weather too, you know? So, but then guess what? They need a car mechanic to fix their car, fix their brake, change their oil, an electrician to fix their electricity, air conditioning, plumbing, you know, construction. You know, they need people and their nurses. So, if you have any kind of skills, there is a shortage. I know, because when we came out here looking for professionals, we found these guys are busy, because there are not enough young working people out here. It's full of old retired people, but old retired people don't do anything. They just live, but they need services. I know a guy who teaches a school, trade school, and he says, hey, I teach all the mechanics. And all the guys that I teach all the mechanics get out of this, we graduate, they all get a job right out of school. Right out of school, they got mechanics jobs waiting for them. So I don't know what you do, but your working age, I think, you know, you may go to, you know, your business or your profession, and your work, bring it out here, my friend, and enjoy life better. And you can't put it behind.
Well, I'm capable of all trades. I had a general contracting license, but I inactivated it.
So you can get a new one in Florida or Texas.
Nah, I just do small stuff now, small repairs, keeping them under $600. I don't need a license. It all works.
All right, my friend. Well, I'll give you my piece of thought. You can do with it as you please, my friend.
I appreciate your input.
You're welcome, Mike. Okay, folks, I think we got a call from area code 708 who may have a question. If you have a question, my friend, the call from area code 708. I got about 25 minutes left to answer your question that you may have. If you do have a question, give me your first name, the state you're calling from, and then your question. Okay, no more questions, folks. It was a pleasure,
hey,
folks.
Are you there, Heyman?
I'm here.
Oh, okay, hi. This is Jeff. I called earlier today, and I have a question for you in regards to a phone call today.
Okay, Jeff. Yes, I'm glad you called. Jeff, what state are you from?
I am from Illinois.
Illinois. Now, let me tell other callers. You called, correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, and you said somebody from the IRS called you, right?
Yes. It was a recorded message, kind of garbly, it's hard to hear, and I believe it said that it said basically, please call us in regards to, and so this is the IRS, in regards to a matter that we would like you to call us before we have to do any litigation or something, bring to a local court or something to that effect. Have you ever heard of such phone calls, recorded message like that before?
Yes.
Are they just
scams? These are scams, Jeff. IRS even tells you about them, yes. These people are calling you from these numbers from India, all these places, to the IRS calling you, threatening you. And when you get scared, they want to scare you with a scary message. You call them. And then when you call them, they say you're going to be indicted, you're going to go to jail, you're in trouble, you want a lot of money, unless you pay some money right now, make a deal. And it's all a scam. Even the IRS on their own website at irs.gov will tell you that. So don't worry about it, Jeff. IRS will write to you, my friend.
Never had that before. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anyway, so I guess there's not too many callers tonight. Last time I called you, you are on Tuesday nights.
Yes.
So,
yes, I've changed.
Well,
yes.
No problem. So you moved to northern, I knew you moved to Florida, but
yes.
You moved to northern Florida?
Central Florida.
Central, okay.
Spring Hill is in central Florida.
Well, my daughter's getting married there in Orlando. Beginning
mm-hmm.
of September, I'll be down there with the whole family thing. And so... I have to move her in. Great guy she's marrying, good Christian guy, and so we're happy for her. I get to taste a little bit of Florida now.
good. I think you'll like it, my friend. It's a lot.
I heard it's humid, though. That's all I heard.
No, you heard false. That's South Florida. That's Miami area. Okay. When you get like Central Florida and North, it's not so humid. It's not tropical. It's subtropical. So it's like a little more humid than Southern California. But you get more rain than California also. You know, so you get more water. You got trees and grass and nature. It's just beautiful. I think to me, Central Florida is a beautiful combination. Like I said, 4 or 5 months of spring, 7-8 months of summer.
Yep.
Can't beat that. No winters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, my wife can't handle the cold. This Illinois stuff is pretty brutal sometimes. Not like Canada, but anyway, she doesn't like cold, so we might be moving there too. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well,
yep.
Thank you. I'll be talking to you next week here because this general trying to do planned maintenance, you might say. Keep educated. Education is a big thing to know. And,
do you have the level one course until law school, Jeff?
I'm sorry, what?
Do you have the level one course of freedom law?
Yes, I do have that, and I would like to learn more. But just trying to keep the house going. So that's one of the reasons why I want to get out of Illinois, because my county, the taxes is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm paying over $7,000 in tax. And
mm-hmm.
that's more than my mortgage payment. So I had enough of that. I need to retire someday soon, and this is taking all my money. So
mm-hmm.
my other climate and all that. So I'll be asking you how to set things up. So.
Mhm. Mhm. Very good.
So. Well, thanks, Payman. I also. I'd like to get a book. Remember a guy named Bill Benson?
Yes.
Is he still around?
Yes, he is.
Okay. Does he still live in South Holland, Illinois?
Yes, I believe so. In fact, I got to call him. The website is down.
I'd like to pay him a visit. I need his phone number, so I'll ask you for that so I can talk to him. I don't know if he's in a phone book or not. No one has phones anymore. They have cell phones. So I'd like to go visit him and get an autographed copy of his book. So,
yes, he should be too far from you. So that we can get you his book. That's not a problem, my friend. But give me a call next week on the conference call. I should contact him by that time.
Because he's only about 15 minutes away from me. 10 minutes, 15.
Oh, wow. You're down the street from him. Good. Well, you could be maybe a good big support helping him out.
Yeah, I would like to. I mean, he's always been in the back of my mind.
Yeah, I'd like to put you in touch with him if you can help him out.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, have a blessed evening.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Stay with you, my friend.
All right. I'll be talking to you.
All right, my friend. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, folks. Thank you very much for being with me this conference call. I'm enjoying it very much. Your questions, issues you bring are interesting. And good to talk to you guys. I'll be doing the videos, hopefully, before end of this year, video conference calls, so you guys can see me as well. So meanwhile, tell your friends, become a fan of Freedom Lost on Facebook. I'm doing a lot more there. You can talk and meet a lot more freedom people there on Facebook. So through our, our Facebook page, you can meet like-minded people. So with that, folks, have a great evening. I look forward to being with you again next Thursday night. Good night.